Hey, Henry, do you remember that you always wanted to release a cover song?
I remember.
And I asked if this was because you had no time to write songs yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. Hey, who could forget? Yeah.
So while you were out all night dancing...
They were playing hits at the club.
Really?
And I remember shaking it.
How did that go?
I was served with a cease and desist.
Anyways, we're here to announce our next release is coming soon, November 25th, 2022.
Every move I make, every rule I break, makes me want it more.
First, our reworking of the Devo classic, Don't You Know.
Don't you know I got a thing that looks for you. Don't you know the way you make me feel about you.
And track two is our version of the Rihanna classic, Umbrella.
I'm just waiting round for you.
Don't you know, Douglas Stank?
I always celebrate Christmas in August by going to all the electronics store super sales, you know. Maybe the furniture store, too.
That's because and mattress stores, too, don't forget.
You know, they have the ads where the Santa Claus, you know it's Santa because it's a fat guy with a beard, but he's not in his traditional Santa garb. He's in red fur-trimmed shorts. He's laying poolside, and he's thinking about those great deals at ABC Warehouse.
Are you sure that's not my neighbor? I mean, he's got the beard, the girth, the shorts. He's got it all.
Maybe it is your neighbor. Do you live next to Santa Claus?
Maybe. Hey, that could be a future Christmas song, living next to Santa. All manner of inconvenience. You'll be scooping up deer poop.
Yeah. Does reindeer poop float away, though? The Douglas Stank Podcast. Well, you know, we're here to talk about our Christmas song from a few years back.
That's right. It's a hit. It's a Christmas hit, so it's a qualified hit.
So we figured we'd do this for the traditional Christmas in August. We'd time it. And the song we're talking about is Unmasked This Christmas. This is the Douglas Stank Podcast. I am a host. My name is Nathan, and who are you?
This is Henry. It's not my show, but I'm on this show.
How is it not your show? You don't want your fingerprints on this?
No. I mean, you're gracious enough to produce the show and, you know, make it fit for human consumption.
Did I, though?
Take out all the heavy metals and the polio and just make it fit for...
There's nothing I can do about the cadmium.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, you try. I know you do heroic efforts. We get quadruple distilled with reverse osmosis. So you try, but you do make it fit for human consumption. But I would consider, yes, myself a co-host. Now, today, I feel like I want to ask you the bulk of the questions. Because this was, although it's a Douglas Stank song, this would qualify more as a Nathan or a...
See, you don't want your fingerprints on this one. You were involved in this song.
I wouldn't want fingerprints on it. Hey, I'm happy to lay fingerprints on it. I may have made a few editorial comments here and there.
All right.
A few.
All right. So are you just saying off the bat, like, I want nothing to do with this song. Take my name off it.
Oh, never, never. Come on. This is destined to be a Christmas hit. I would like, you know, an eighth of the residuals. And you're entitled to like 7/8 or 9/10.
I mean, if you're half the songwriting credit, then you're entitled to 1/4, which I don't really remember what the I don't have it in front of me. I think you have share songwriting credit.
Well, okay. Hey, if I do, what I would do with that money, use most of it to buy you something nice for Christmas.
Well, I say you could use it to buy candy canes. And right. Gingerbread houses, those always go up in value. You want to buy them early.
Oh, that's true.
Before you have to get a mortgage.
This is not directly related to the topic, but, you know, buying things. Did you realize that there is, you know, these Funko Pops, like people actually buy them and then sell them like commodities? It blows my mind. And yeah, there are podcasts about this. And not only podcasts, like YouTube creators. So if we ever needed to divest into another direction or expand,
we could always
go into the Funko Pop. It's hilarious how like they always freak out. They're like, oh, when it first came out, the price skyrocketed for this one. And they say that about every single one, as if it's just not like the trend for every single one of these things that exist. Oh, it comes out, people buy it, it skyrockets, and then it crashes in value.
have they always been called Funko Pops? I seem to remember they used to be called Beanie Babies.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Hey-o! Are you a proud owner of Funko Pops?
I only have the ones that other people have gotten for me. So I will tell you, I have like a fifth brother and a C-3PO, I think. A fifth brother Funko Pop from back in Rebels, not from like Obi-Wan days. This was before anybody knew anything about any of the brothers or sisters of Star Wars.
Before,
you know, I bet the value for that one skyrocketed when it came out and then crashed.
Before the Grand Inquisitor's head was rounder.
Yeah. Yeah. When they made it now his head looks like a Funko Pop. If you see it now.
Oh, you think that's why they did that?
Yeah, maybe. You know, you always have to have synergy. Synergy is the thing. Like, for example, for us, if we wanted to, you know, and unmask this Christmas, we could make T-shirts, ugly sweaters, unmask this Christmas. What do you think?
If people would buy them, I guess.
Yeah.
You're not going to see me wearing it.
How can they just post a comment saying like whether or not you would buy the Unmask This Christmas Ugly Sweater?
They could reach out to us on Twitter. Dank Douglas, that's me.
There may be even a Funko Pop. Well, I don't know if it wouldn't be Funko. It would be like whatever off-brand that exists. Because Funko, I suppose, is its own company. We couldn't make our own Funko. Ours would be ultra limited edition. We'd probably have like five of them.
Five? But
we can number them like
we'd
one
have
to five.
Five of them?
Yeah. Well, how many? What's the minimum you could make? Probably 100, right?
Oh, you
so
mean
we have
100
of
the same
of them.
Ones?
We can number them exclusively 1 to 100.
I thought you meant five different models. There's two of us.
Yeah. No. No. But also, wouldn't you want one? Yeah. I guess. Well, we could do it like with holiday. You know, it'd be fun is to like put on holiday clothes and be rocking a candy cane instead of a guitar, right?
I suppose.
Or have a drum set in front, but the drum set that you're playing is a big gingerbread house, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
I'd eat it, I guess. No.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And you could be breaking off a piece of it on the funk.
When you celebrate Christmas in August, you do a lot less of the building houses out of food because in the summer, you know, you get more ants and things.
Oh,
flies,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That is true. Yeah, different. You can't really build it and then just leave it sitting around. It's just, it's too, you know, it's another sacrifice.
What do you remember about the genesis for deciding to make a Christmas song?
Well, you know, I think we were toying with that idea a long time. We've done some Christmas covers that are, if anyone is lucky enough to hear some, have our like bootlegs, right?
Yeah.
We got a few. We got,
that's what we call them. We call them lucky.
Yeah, right. They are. Well, and then also Christmas in Jail, evergreen classic. Well,
I can tell you now, throwing back the curtain, we are, you know, we no longer use the same service to get our music online. And the one we had at the time, it was pricey to do cover songs. And a lot, you know, there are a lot of traditional Christmas songs that are in the public domain, but there's a lot of popular ones that are not in the public domain. They're, you know, they were written in the last, you know, 95 years or whatever. And so they would require the mechanical license and all that sort of stuff. Now, I am looking at some other distributing services that I think will allow us to distribute cover songs at a more reasonable price. So we might be having some coming out soon in the future.
Excellent. But, hey, does that include some that you were recently tried or not tried yet?
I don't understand.
Like not covers, but like, you know, the distributing service.
Yeah. It's I haven't used it yet. I've created an account.
Okay. Anyways. All right.
Anyways, but at the time, this is kind of a special episode because the previous episodes that we've had of the Douglas Tang podcast, it kind of split them into two mini seasons, one for each of our first two releases that were each about five songs. Now, this song came out as a single on its own for Christmas 2020. So this is just a one-off. That's why we're doing a special Christmas in August episode.
Holy crap, it was Christmas 2020?
Yes.
That came out?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes, because and coming off the first two releases we did, you know, we're like, "Oh, let's do a Christmas song or whatever." And then we're like, "Oh, we don't want to do a cover, so we wrote one."
That's true. Yeah. Well, and you really went all out. You know, this is a great, I would say it is a timeless classic, but also captures the moment. But also has some deeper construction to it.
Was it a cynical cash grab?
I don't think so. No, I think it celebrated the season, you know? That's the ideal Christmas song. There are a few that, you know, truly celebrate the season that aren't, you know, cash grab. But hey, you know, what if... You know, sometimes you can have your cake and eat it too. You know, you put out the song, it gains traction. You can't help it that people resonate with it. That's what you wanted, you know, you want people to hear it, resonate with it, and oh, wow, you also get some residuals from it, and before you know it, you're living off of the holiday season.
Yeah.
And it's not your fault, you know, it's just...
We're like, every December, every August, you know, you get that little mini peak of Christmas songs being played, and that's when you really, so you're looking forward to, I got some more pennies this month.
Yeah, this August. Look out, back to school. We're on fire. That's true.
All right, well, before we play any clips, you said you had questions to ask about the song, or you might have questions.
Okay, so tell me what went through your mind here you were first formulating the construction. What was it about? Or do you want to talk themes, or do you want to wait till it's over?
Well, this is kind of a cynical cash grab, and... I think I had the title first, right? Because we were in the I don't know if you remember back then, but back then in 2020, everyone was concerned about this disease, this coronavirus, right? This is one of the coronaviruses. Yeah, you know, people were concerned about a particular strain that they called the COVID-19 because there had been 18 previous ones. And so this one, the 19th one, people were concerned about, and you had all these precautions and you had all these things. And the cynical cash grab is to try to tie together the popularity of Christmas along with the catchphrases and the words and everything that tied into that timely disease. If we could only remember far back to put us in the time when everyone was still worried about this thing of the past, right?
So, all right, exactly.
So I think I came up with the title first, Unmask This Christmas, right? That's because people were wearing masks, and you can't get together unless we're wearing masks, and you know, whatever.
Yeah, unlike today, right? Where
it's all in the past.
All in the past. Everyone has to remember. Some people may have not been, some of the listeners may not have been born.
Yes, some of you might be too young to remember. That way back in 2020, everyone was concerned about this.
All you four-year-olds may not remember that time back then. Four and younger, especially. I mean, you know, they have no idea what a world, you know, without Peacock is like. The Peacock streaming network, not to mention COVID. They had to get their NBC content the old-fashioned way, through cable.
Anyways,
you think back then... that's the problem. Whenever there's a new disease, nobody knows what the hell to do with it. So they're just throwing out like, oh, well, you got to put on the mask in this setting or that setting. No one freaking knows.
You got to put it on your face.
So they're just like putting
you
out whatever.
You
got to
put it on your crotch. You got to.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. You wear one on your crotch only during the hours between 9 and midnight. And then you're safe to remove it, but then put it on your face.
Yes.
After you got that vital crotch protection. So, you know, it was a time of confusion and couples were wearing the mask, you know, indoors sometimes. But in this case, you're encouraging people who are, you know, coupled that they can unmask for Christmas.
I heard that you could get Chobani sauce now, too.
That's right, Henry. The delicious dressing that Pizza Bob's has been serving all these years while keeping the recipe a top secret is now available in bottles for home use. Chobani sauce, the delicious dressing that made a Chobani famous and kept people coming back to Pizza Bob's for decades, can now be yours at home. Put it on salads, use it as a dip, dress up those homemade burgers, or put it on whatever you like.
You know, now you can have Chobani sauce shipped anywhere in your home in the continental United States.
Can't make it to Ann Arbor? You can have delicious Chobani sauce shipped to your home anywhere in the United States. Go to our website and order today. PizzaBobs.net. PizzaBobs.net. What's that website again? PizzaBobs.net, where you can order Chobani sauce shipped to your home.
Well, all right. You know what? If we're going to go through this song, let's start with the piano track. It gives you the chord structure of the song. If you're ready to play that.
All right, let's go for it.
So I can tell you, being a cynical cash grab, I was thinking, oh, well, in the verse part, I'll do it like some sort of doo-wop song with arpeggiated chords and three-quarter time. And the chorus would be more like a modern pop Christmas song, like more like a standard 4/4 rock song.
That's good. See, it gives you everything you want out of a Christmas kind of holiday classic. Gives you the retro a little bit.
I'll tell you, the part where you contributed to the writing of the song is in the verse, when it to lead into the chorus, when it goes to a different sort of chord pattern of more minor chord key. That was because I didn't have that at first, but then you said I don't remember your exact suggestion, but you were like, oh, there's something missing or something there.
I could tell you, I remember. I do remember clearly this that moment. What it was is listening to it, it's like, yeah, it's good, but it needs that tension. You know, like every good Beatles song, there's like the part that Paul wrote and the part that John wrote. The part that John wrote gives it the tension, like in the bridge.
Oh, you can break down the Beatles songs and know which note.
Yeah, well, like the song John. Two of Us, for example. It's got that bridge that goes into kind of like this other key, and it's more like a minor tone kind of, and then the other part is Paul McCartney's, you know, poppy kind of major chord stuff. Yeah, I remember. That's what it was missing, that just little hit, that sweet spot.
And then we get to the end of the song. This is inspired from like being in like high school band, where we do this Christmas song where at the end of it, better instruments, like the trumpets, they'd be playing fanfares that would bring in the melody from a variety of Christmas songs as like a counterbalance to what everyone else was playing. And so I did that with the piano, too, throwing in, you know, the old traditional public domain Christmas
that was
melodies,
awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
Just to go into the mix there of the whole song. So taking
that's
from
right. And I do remember early in the process. Yeah, I love that. I was just going to comment too, by the way, what you're talking about, that hit at the end, right? That kind of that. That was excellent too. You know, that kind of gave it the classic kind of pop ending.
Yeah.
You hit it was a totally different chord, wasn't it? Or was it just the D chord in there that you hit?
I don't have it in front of me. It's certainly some form a major chord. I mean,
yeah, it was a great major chord hit, just to kind of linger out.
You were just hearing the one thing there, though, just the piano. Yeah. I mean, everything else mixes in too.
And I remember early in the process, although I'm sure you were thinking about this too. We were talking about how it has to have. I think every single one of our Christmas songs have had jingle bells in them, right? In some way.
Let's talk about them later.
All right. We'll come to that.
The next part of that fits in with how I was constructing the song is the guitar. If you can, we'll play that. beginning part, that's how I hear like a doo-wop sort of guitar kind of thing. You just it goes in junction with the bass too. The bass plays the root note, and then you have the guitar kind of thing. Like it, when you're defining like the three-quarter time, the bass would play on the first beat, and then you. And then into generic, like, distorted, electrified power chords for the chorus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you really pushed, like, it was like doo-wop deconstructed, where it's like, you know, and really kind of, you pushed the effects to kind of, like, their natural limit.
You know, like, going back and listening to this song makes me think I might do a remaster of this soon. This is still... pretty early in my production. I have a lot more experience now, and I don't know, there's some things on this that are a little like go against best practices.
Why is that? Like what?
Oh, just like I'm capable of a lot more when it comes to getting things compressed and sounding better and whatever.
That almost sounded like it had some like it has chorus on there, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's clean for the doo-wop parts.
Clean, but it is overdriven. I mean, it's like clean, but like rockabilly kind of overdriven clean.
Yeah. It's trying to sound like the 50s or something.
Yeah, you weren't trying to play it on like the neck pickup, for example. That was more of a bridge pickup, overdrive.
Yeah, pickup.
Overdriven, I should say. I don't think overdrived is a word unless it's quoted. Like the overdrive part quoted. Oh man, what about the production of that track? I mean, do you remember more about the production of that bit of that this track of the of this soundtrack? You know, the guitar part.
I probably played a guitar.
Okay, what was it going into? Was it going into the amp, or was it going into into the
computer? I think it would have been going into the interface and modeled and everything like that. I'm pretty sure I would have been using my, I don't 100% remember. I'm pretty sure I would be using my Jackson, the humbucking pickup. For the first collection of songs, like I was using the Fender with the single coil pickups, but I think I had switched because I was able to get my Jackson in tune and everything. Okay. It had the Jackson. It has the Floyd Rose Tremola floating bridge, and I bought that guitar a very long time ago. At the time, it's not like the guy at the Guitar Center like had any instruction to give me about the guitar. I really wanted a different guitar, but then it was the kind of a bait and switch kind of thing. It was like nonsense, right? Where I should have just walked out of the store, where like they had this other guitar and it's like, oh, this is really nice. And it was like, you know, it was a different model Jackson. So it's very similar, but it was black with like matte wood grain sort of look to it. And I was playing it and I liked it. And then, oh, well, that's the wrong price on it. It really is, you know, it's not really discounted like that. It's really this. And it was I couldn't afford it. So I bought this other one, which I'm not, it's not that I hate this one. It was just like, you know, what the hell's wrong with these guys? It's just classic, yeah. Sort of like.
Now, a wood grain Jackson? What the heck? Hold on.
Oh, no, you're going to try to look it up?
Yeah. The only other Jacksons I ever see look like they're made, you know, like where they were for like 80s, 90s metal. So, you know, it's all black.
No, this was matte black, but it had like a wood grain sort of feel for it. Anyways, so
you could see the wood. Hold on a second. I just need that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll come back to that. All right. Enough, I guess, the guitar talk, but we know now what guitar it was played on.
Anyways, I went back to like the Floyd Rose Tremola bridge requires, you have to tune it differently than a regular guitar. And nobody ever showed me that. And so I played with it years ago, and then I picked it up and I couldn't get it in tune. So what I did is I went online and actually found out how to tune it. And oh, lo and behold, I can get it in tune and keep it in tune, and it's not broken.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You just need a couple Allen wrenches and crap, right? Like,
well, you just need to know you have to do, because it has like a clamp on the nut.
Yeah, right? So you have to compensate for that.
You have to take off the clamp. You have to do most of the tuning there, and then clamp it down, and then do the fine tuning at the bridge with the little thumb screws and stuff on the bridge. And then it stays in tune nicely. Because I couldn't, it was like fighting against itself to get it in tune. But now it works the way it should.
Nice. Okay, cool. So now you can really do your dive bomb.
Oh, because you know, whammy bar. I lost the whammy bar years ago, and I don't want to do that. But I am a metalhead, so I prefer the humbucking pickups to the single coil, I guess.
Heck yes, come on. All right, excellent. All right, so we know what it went into. What amp did you model?
I don't know. Is that the question? Everyone's dying to know the answer.
Everyone's dying, yeah, to know. Let's say we have young up and comers. They want to cover this song, and they want to get accurate tone.
Well, I think they're taking the wrong approach to covering the song. Then, like, I'm not. You know, I'm so not like a gearhead sort of person. And like, if you're gonna cover a song, you shouldn't be trying to sound exactly alike. Because then, what's the point? You should take the song and imagine, oh, this is how I would do this song. Like, that's how I want to do a cover song, is to like, what if this had never been recorded and someone just came to me with this, just a basic song, how would I just do it? You know, not,
yeah, like, nice.
Let me try to prove I'm just as good as the original artist.
No, yeah, exactly. We need to, and you're not just going to slow it down and play it on an acoustic and then sing it like breathily.
Well, what are you knocking that? Maybe I would.
I mean, you know, admittedly, that happens a lot. I guess sometimes they speed it up or make it louder and then still sing it, like, either can sing it breathily if it's, you know, slow it down and sing it breathily, or speed it up, distort it, and sing it, you know, in metal style if it were like more of an acoustic song.
Those seem like cliches, but I'm not going to knock those sort of cliches. It's better than trying to recreate the original.
Yeah.
Know, just with different people singing it.
I love me a good cover of a song that I wouldn't otherwise listen to, if it resonates, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes a good cover does a good job of making it a better song and kind of making fun of the song or the original song at the same time. If you're into doing that.
Yeah, I kind of gotten away. It's just doing karaoke. At one point, I learned the lesson: don't do a song you don't like. You get up there and you're like, oh, I'll show people how dumb this song is. But then you're like a minute in, you're like, why am I up here singing this?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Why am I up here singing The Clash? Like,
even if you could do it in a death metal style,
you know,
right? Anyways, exactly. That's a good point. That's a good thing to remember. For all you kids out there, don't pick a song that you don't like.
Yeah,
that's good life advice. All right. Now, do you want to go on to our next track?
Yeah, we should go with the bass to show how it mixes in with the, well, we're not sure how it mixed in, but like how it builds in, like with that doo-wop part at the beginning.
All right. Two separate bass lines.
That was the first thing.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, a lot of things I do are to make it easier for me to not have to, like, practice or get better at instruments, right? So, you know, you could tell that it's definitely playing bass guitar. Like, you can hear the string rattle and stuff, which, I mean, I'm not intentionally getting string rattling or whatever, but there it is. But then there's also synth bass, mostly playing the same part, although in a couple small sections they're playing something different, like in the middle eight section or whatever you want to call it, that you John Lennon for us.
Right. So yeah, it's really good to hear tracks do that. I mean, that's a little bit not used enough.
Do you think it fits in the doo-wop style?
It's a little experimental, honestly, for doo-wop, but it fits. I mean, it still fits, but it's,
well, I mean, like, just the what they're playing, though, like
the oh yeah Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine, though, a doo-wop band and, like, two bass players show up there? No one would know what the heck to make of. They'd be calling Chuck Berry on the phone.
Stay away from that guy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if we talked about this podcast before. Like the stories, like, the old rock and roll people tell about them, or, like, when they, like, ran into them. I was watching this thing. It's, like, a documentary made by all these rock people, like Keith Richards and Bruce Springsteen and all these people. They made this documentary about Chuck Berry. And, like, you know, Chuck Berry made a lot of good music and wrote a lot of good songs and stuff. But, like, he's a dick. He's a crazy person. And, like, you know, he served time in prison for things. And you know, maybe there's some sort of, like, oh, maybe selective prosecution and you know, when race is a factor and stuff. But he's, like, you know, he's with underage girls in inappropriate situations and stuff like that.
Oh,
but,
yeah, that.
Yeah, and but, like, he's a, like, as he aged, he just kept touring in, like, the cheap and kind of basically just ripping off audiences all over the world, because, like, he just hires local bands. He doesn't want to pay to tour with a band. So he just hires local bands. Doesn't care if they're any good or not. Doesn't even, like, practice with them. Just assumes they know his songs. And
oh my gosh.
And wow. Just is like, we're doing this. You know, he announces the song, and that band, you know, however competent they are, is expected to keep up while he plays. And he just, like, keeps going and, like, demands cash up front when he gets to the venue. He won't play if he doesn't have all the cash in his hand. And, like, okay, I get that. He's been ripped off in his career and all that sort of stuff. But it's also because he's evading taxes, too. I mean, that's part of what he got legal cash. Trouble for that, too. So it's, like, of his own, because, you know, it wasn't, you know, that's one of the things he was in prison for, I think. But then it's, like, Keith Richards, who in this documentary is still, like idolizes him into a crazy degree, is like, oh, I went backstage, because they were doing, like, a comeback special for Chuck Berry. He'd been in legal trouble because of, like, taxes and all these. It was, like, the 70s, and all these rock people were like, oh, let's organize a show and get him back out there and all this other stuff. And so you know, they've been practicing. They want to make him look his best. They've been practicing with this all-star band, and Keith Richards sees Chuck Berry's guitar in his dressing room, and he's like, oh, wow, he plays that. And he went to go pick it up. Chuck Berry walked in the room and punched him for touching his guitar.
Wow. Oh, wow, for touching it.
For touching it. And Keith Richards is just like, oh, I'm sorry. And he still idolizes him. He's, like, still speaking about in glowing terms.
I am for that.
And this documentary and stuff.
That's kind of a dick thing to do.
That's Chuck Berry for you.
Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, not to mention all those, like, remember, it was in the 80s, too. He was, like, he must have been in his 70s. Those stories where he had those hidden cameras everywhere in his own club in inappropriate places, like bathrooms.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, and he got busted for that. I mean, so I don't think that was necessarily selective. It was just somebody noticed he's doing this kind of brazenly, and, like, he got busted for it.
Do you want to go next to the vocals?
So you didn't play it in the style of Chuck Berry, because otherwise you'd be, like, in jail.
Like I said, I'm not saying this to dump on Chuck Berry as like his songs.
Oh, to dump on him.
Hey-o! I just, like, wouldn't. I'm glad I was never in a situation to meet him. He's a crazy person.
Well, he didn't want to use his restroom.
Like, I hope I'm never in that situation where, like, it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to look the other way for some, like, weird behavior from somebody whose songs you like or whatever, you know?
Yeah. But that kind of sucks as we get older. I really don't feel like, you know, I feel like I like the songs, but I don't know necessarily if there's a performer that I would idolize in any way like that, you know, like how Keith Richards was idolizing Chuck Berry.
You just want to stay away from learning more about them, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. You don't want to, learn about your heroes. Cause usually that's another good life lesson. Stay away from your heroes for the most part. Because I heard a story, for example, not my hero, but many people's hero in Milwaukee, Bob Uecker. Apparently, he can be, like, a jerk and cranky when you talk to him in public. But also, he's trying to eat a steak dinner. He doesn't want people to come up and be like, hey, can you sign my my hat? You know?
Yeah.
Can you imagine that if you're just trying to eat and people are constantly asking you to sign things? I mean, we've had to deal with that in certain places, but like,
yeah, what we're saying is, please bother us so that we feel more important.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's why. Right, what's next? That's why we've striven to be so anonymous. We just couldn't handle.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's
our
thing.
Song just so good. We would be pestered. It would be like a scene from Hard Day's Night. We wouldn't get a moment's rest. We'd just be running down the street, being chased by mobs of people. That's why we've intentionally held ourselves back.
That's right. Exactly. And then if people know your address, they're going to we'd get these bags full of mail we'd have to deal with. It's better to be more anonymous.
I think we should listen to the vocal track next to get a sense of the words of the song. I feel that might spark discussion.
All right, let's go.
My test came back negative, which is good. The next three will be two, at least they should.
There then we go, that's a cappella.
Sure.
It is there.
Okay.
I think the vocals were recorded well. You do a good job first of all, production wise, it's good production. And lyrics, I think you caught the moment.
Caught the moment. Right?
Literally caught the moment by not trying to catch anything.
I laugh every time I hear it go, my last test was negative. The next three should be two. Yeah, the next three will be two. At least they should.
Yeah, right, exactly. When you talk about the person, talk about the PPE. What did you rhyme that with? Tree? A Christmas tree?
Geez. Now we sound foolish because we don't remember our own song. I said PPE gear. It's just funny to spell it out anyway.
Yeah.
No, it's. I say the last test was negative, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
The next, you know, because people back then, you know, during the COVID time, especially early on, it was like, oh, the tests aren't they aren't really that reliable. So you got to be tested multiple times in order to be sure that you don't have it. Okay?
No, yeah, that's right. Because it gave false negatives, but fewer false positives.
Right. So, so you catch all the layers of the song, all the layers that are there in the meanings.
Well, sure. There's the literal layer. But then tell us, I know from conversation with you about more. So tell us how the rest of it unfolds. Run math.
Can't actually pose that as a question. You're just like one of those like when an athlete's like after a game and the guy's like, talk about your performance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So what other layers can we unmask here? Can you?
Well, I just thought it was funny. This girl I was working with, she's like, in the song you say, I've been waiting for 9 months. Why'd you say that? Like, well, two reasons. One is like the whole pandemic thing started in like a March, and then Christmas is like 9 months after that. But also because Christmas is about a birth, a pregnant woman giving birth. And she said, no, it's not.
What?
I said, yes, it is. She said, no, it's not. I said, yes, it is.
What?
It's one of those like true meaning of Christmas little things, right? So like,
what did she think?
That's one of the layers there. Like, I mean, you know, she's a young person this day. You know, I suppose maybe she thought she learned the true meaning of Christmas from like Peanuts Christmas specials or something or whatever, and how it's about sharing or something like that. You know, well, in the song, it's one of the layers, right? Because I make reference to 9 months of waiting, which is both pandemic restrictions and all those things that are keeping people apart. And now they're going to do everything they can to meet for the holidays. But also Christmas is about the birth of Jesus. They were waiting 9 months. That's how long a human being gestates. I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. Just about 9 months. Right.
Yeah. So it's
a little over
one of the layers that, of course, as much as this, you know, you could just make a cynical cash grab, but to have an enduring Christmas song, you mix the cynical crash grab with the trademark true meaning of Christmas. You sneak that in there. So
that's
you
it.
Have
I think,
the religious
I think you
significance
do get
of the
that.
Holiday.
I mean,
get it in there.
Right?
But then you also have the layers about, all the ways, just like our social distance song, all the ways in which the restrictions and the pandemic and the paranoia and the anxieties that people have, how it's dividing people and keeping them apart, and the masks being symbolic of that. So we're hoping to uncover yourself, to be vulnerable and open to other people for Christmas, you know, removing our masks, right? Of course, there's also the layer in the song of making out with somebody at Christmas because you take the masks off, right? So there's
also
the romantic element. All right, that's a layer.
Yeah, finding the mistletoe.
Right.
And then taking that risk for love.
Right.
You know, it's all built into there. I mean, it will be an enduring classic.
But all, in that true meaning also, like, you know, that's what, Christmas, breaking the veil between God and man by the incarnation. And so that's also peeling away masks and everything. And you're opening yourself up to God. That's one of those little snuck in the cynical cash grab.
Right, exactly. So, you know, for all those people who are wondering about the meaning of Christmas, it's in there too. And, you know, the deeper philosophical, theological meaning, you know, of, like you say, removing the mask from humanity's heart.
Yep, the things that divide us, things that we've put there artificially to keep us apart. Like a song says, I want to see you face to face. So on the one hand, that's about the romantic tension of like, oh, I've got my sweetheart I'd like to see on Christmas by the tree under the mistletoe. I want to see her face to face. We've had these masks in a way. I want to have that sort of, you know, innocent intimacy, at least of that. But also that's an image from the Bible of the intimacy that man hopes to have with God that's been broken by sin, that can be redeemed by the birth of the Savior, is to know God face to face.
Yes, there you go. I mean, come on. So anyone who would be cynical about this song, that's why I think it's beyond, like you were saying, you know, like we say, it's beyond a cash grab. I mean, this is almost a statement on uplifting humanity.
It's a trademark.
Truly is. For Christmas in August.
Christmas.
You
know? Christmas in August. That's right.
All right. Well, hey, that's excellent.
Do you want to hear?
Thank you. That's good. I think this song is one of the deeper. I mean, they're all deep and they all have their different layers, but I mean, this one truly has multifold layers to it.
All right. Well, let's listen next to background vocals. I hired a choir.
Oh yeah, let's hear the choir. Excellent. Okay. Now tell us how many people were in the choir.
That is four voices.
Okay.
It's three different people because there's two tracks of me. the male voices are me.
How were they mic'd? Was each track done individually and then put together? Were they
everyone
did one except for two of you?
I think we did it all separately. One track of our frequent collaborator Catherine singing from the Calm Down Catherine podcast. Her intern at that podcast, Odessa, she is singing a track. And you know, the inspiration is like for the verse part to be like doo-wop, doo-wop, sort of background singers, right? And then in the chorus part to be like the background singing you hear in like All I Want for Christmas Is You, or like the Mariah Carey version.
Oh, right, exactly, yeah. So you can hear the transition between styles.
Yeah.
They nailed that. And it's hard to direct a choir, but you pulled it off.
Yeah.
What was your favorite thing about having the choir?
Well, everyone loves the bass man. That's what everyone loves. They love the guy, you know, contributing like, oh yeah.
Hey, those are hard to find too. A lot of them are like reclusive. That same bass man could be like, doing like Westwood One, you know, like Westwood One presents NFL football. And apparently that is, because that guy, like, he's reclusive. He can't say his name.
You're trying out to do that?
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. But I'm just telling you, there is a man who does that. And radio stations that use his hits aren't even allowed to, like, say his name. He, like, wants to be, like, not known.
So he can't be found.
Wants to be sold to like hundreds of them.
That's it. Oh, that's probably it too. Yeah.
You know, it's funny that they don't just use like studio trick, because like I could say, you know, like Douglas Stank or
Douglas Stank,
and then just like digitally lower it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like that's funny at this day and age, you know, with cost cutting and in the radio world, why that guy still can make his millions. But I guess, hey, good for him. But you're right now. Well, they don't maybe have all the sophisticated tools that are available to us, you know.
Yeah, they don't have the equipment.
Right, exactly. Not on their budgets. I mean, come on. So, oh, man. Okay, so that was excellent. Now, are they going to be hired out for well, they've appeared in future in other releases since then. I shouldn't say future, but like other releases, right? I've heard elements of the choir in other Douglas Stank releases. But I'll leave it to the fans to track them down.
We can discuss it more with some other songs and stuff. Who else appears? It's not always the same background singers or other contributors and all that sort of stuff. You know.
I see. Okay. Yeah, so there's variety. If
people have questions about these sorts of things, that's why we have this podcast out there as a service. You know, not every band will do this for their fans, right? Now, you know, we got to work in tracking down like someone to translate this into Finnish, if that's a real language. But,
right. Exactly. Oh, my goodness. This podcast would be gold if we had a Finnish. Are you speaking of like the Douglas Stank World Report? Like that tells lets fans know where the hit, where we're trending the most.
Well, we recently had a release of our album. We would like you to dance, Douglas Stank, and the lead track on that. The weekend starts on Thursday night, so I get information from Spotify for artists telling me, oh, how many streams and all this other stuff. Huge spike in streams, and I go to investigate, and it was like, oh, a huge spike in listeners, and 75% of those listeners were in Helsinki, Finland, and I have no explanation for that at all. Don't worry, it's short-lived. That spike went back down. But I looked up, what's the deal with Spotify in Finland, right? Like, is there something going on, you know? And the only thing it said was that there's these weird Finnish like EDM bands that... I don't. You use Spotify at all? You can create
sometimes. Rarely.
You can create playlists, right, and then listen to them, and you can share them with other people. And the other thing you can do is you can have a setting on it. Is it a private playlist that only I can edit, or you can set it to public? If you have a public playlist, other people can see it, and then they can edit it. Most people wouldn't bother. Who cares about other people's playlists? But some people, not aware of that's what that setting means, they just put their playlists out there public. They don't expect anybody to find them. Or maybe they think there's some small group of people out there they'd like to help create it. This Finnish band will send bots out to find public playlists and then insert their own songs into them, like hundreds of them, hundreds of their songs.
What?
So people have been talking about how, oh, I created a playlist for my grandmother's funeral, and all these Finnish EDM songs are on it. Oh, I created a playlist to play when the kids are in the car, and there's all these Finnish bands. They're not very good songs at all, so everyone says. So I don't think that's what's going on with us, but maybe it's some sort of an inverse Finland sort of thing, like America's revenge, that Finnish people were forced somehow into contact with our song.
So if somebody from Finland, let's say, found our song though and put it in someone else's playlist with their bot, would that count as a Finnish play though, or a US play if it was played in the US?
Well, it's about where it was played. It'd be a US play.
Yeah, so something else going. I think there's
let's clear this up.
I also, to connect those dots, on Apple Play for artists, I looked and we did have like it was single digits, but it was in Tampere, Finland.
So we hopped the curb from one streaming service to another in Finland. There's a certain amount of like, oh, I submitted the song to be considered by Spotify and as the one track from the album, and like, oh, it's going to be placed in algorithmic playlists or onto the release radar for people who followed us or they think they might like it or something like that. And so there's going to be some amount of traffic you'd expect to see. I don't know why Finland. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, and in Finland, so the ones I saw were this song is for the robots.
Yeah, so some Finnish people heard the one song, and they're like, they can't all be this bad, right?
Oh, yeah, no, they can't all be this world-changing.
Yes.
Well, then they found that track.
Yes.
We'll just have to see how big Jane Seymour is in Finland, if she has a following.
You mentioned it earlier. We have one more element to the song we haven't listened to yet, and that is the bells.
Oh, you need, I mean, come on, it's not Christmas in August and...
You gotta have bells in a Christmas song.
All right, here we go. I'll play the bells.
Well, you like the bells?
For Christmas, July, and August. For Christmas in August and July, too. Now tell us, which cathedral did you go to get that rich, rich...
I think you hear there, for the most part, in the first part, you hear a soft synth that was Jingle Bells. Although, not really what I think of as Jingle Bells, but it sort of worked to give a little tinkle. And then in the...
that's right, tinkling of bells.
And then the chorus, you heard a saw synth carillon. Are you a fan of the carillon?
Hey, come on. It does capture the season. And it also, like, takes you back to holidays, the holiday season. You know, being in church for those bells. It's a time of celebration. I mean,
carillon also, is... It's this big, expensive instrument that requires a lot of a certain amount of strength to physically be able to like push the. They have the keys like a keyboard that you hit hard enough to then have a bell struck. That like I found out about this listening to a podcast once, because like there was a certain fad of towns getting carillons, right? Like, you know, our town has one, the next town over doesn't because they suck. And they have one in Burton Tower in Ann Arbor. And, yeah. You know, you may, there are only a certain number in, you know, whatever, in the state or whatever. And then you're like, the distribution of them. The one that's in Burton Tower is the Charles Baird carillon. It's called that. Charles Baird was the first athletic director of the University of Michigan. And he left his post as athletic director because he got a job at his father-in-law's bank and went and made a bunch of money. And then he donated the carillon to put his name on it to the tower there. Because it was just happened to be like it was the 1920s and it was a big fad.
Yeah, you didn't have TV back then, so come on, the carillon was the next best replacement for that kind of no moving pictures.
Yeah, so if you attended the university, you'd hear it because they actually teach a class that you can go learn playing in it, and you can hear it being played like multiple times a day. They'll play, you know, and the songs will all sound weird because of the way I can't think of the term right now, but the way that you strike metal like that, and the tones, the harmonic resonance of a metal bell like that is not what you would expect, because it's like in a minor key, so it'll make the song sound a little strange.
So it automatically puts it in a minor key.
Well, you can play a major key. It's just like the other frequencies, you know, the harmonics that are played when you strike it, that, you know, for that single note will be like, it'll make it sound a little off.
And usually, so you have to play one note at a time, right, on the carillon, or can you play chords?
I don't know.
I wonder.
Maybe you can do two. Well, hey, two,
I mean,
hands.
It just fits perfectly. And can you imagine, I mean, just 10 years ago, maybe even, or 15, there's no way you could get a carillon sound like that unless you went and recorded. You had to go to where it is. Oh, did
I
say I did it a soft synth?
I climbed onto the tower. I snuck in the middle of the night. I was able to record and then get out of there before the police arrested me.
Yes. So that's amazing that was a soft synth.
And then I think I probably, for the end of the song, I probably did real Jingle Bells.
Oh, sweet. So you combined the real, the practical, and the digital.
Yeah, it's like a modern Star Wars.
Yeah, right, exactly. And if only George Lucas had your toys back then.
Yes.
I don't know if that would have fixed Jar Jar, but maybe.
Wasn't Jar Jar right, fixed when that thing struck him in the crotch at the pod race scene?
Yeah, he was good. He was like the Buster Keaton of those movies, though.
Yes, he's Mr. Stone-faced.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I think we covered it, right? We dissected this track. Is there anything more to learn?
I suppose if people had more questions or concerns, they could contact us. You can find us on Twitter. Look at the show notes, all that great stuff. Otherwise, you know, they could look forward to catching us next season of the Douglas Dang podcast. We would probably be talking about the next release after that, official release. Well, we can either about the album We Would Like You to Dance, or we did release a couple of the songs as a single before that. Well, we could do it either way. We could talk about it just as one album or give a taste with the single. But
Yeah, okay. So it could go either way. What about doing like a World Report podcast? I think the fans would want to know.
A World Report.
Yeah, it's like the where are the songs being played the most? And which track? It is Finland right now. But hey, if you're in other parts of the world, see if you can outplay Finland.
We're looking at you, Hungary.
Right. Anywhere else you like quality tracks that make you think?
People don't want to think.
And we have a full-blown ad campaign going. Maybe that's what it is. The ad campaign is helping draw
all the ads that we put on our own podcast.
Right.
And on the Calm Down Catherine podcast.
Maybe she's getting a lot of Finnish traffic, too, and they're hearing it's cross-promotion.
Well, I'm not sure if she's crossed that Finnish line.
The Finnish line.
Is that how we should just end it right there?
I think so. I think that's the way to go. And have a great, or how would you say? I guess it's still a merry Christmas in August and July. August.
Enjoy your superstore shopping, your furniture store. And whatever else people do.
Exactly. Oh, the laying poolside by the burn pit, as always happens this time of year. So enjoy it. Maybe you should take us out with Christmas bells.
We'll just play the whole song. That's what we'll do.
Oh yeah, okay. That'll do it. That'll put everyone in the spirit. Christmas.
My test came back negative. Rich is good. The next three will be two. They should. Then I'll isolate myself to be sure I'm not contagious at Christmas. Coming home won't be late. Won't make a stop on the interstate. The only exposure that I want is to you at Christmas. I've been staying. Unmask this Christmas.